Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, September 23rd, 2021. South Sudan's vice president says her government is ready to open a new chapter with traditional friends in the international community.
Because for us, peace is the only thing now we have in our hand in South Sudan. The region is tired of us. The international community are tired of us. They are fatigued. So with this, with all the shortcomings, we will nurture this.
And the South Sudanese minister smiles once again after a Kenyan court ordered his bank account to be restored in Nairobi.
So I'm very happy that the court in Kenya acted independently and judiciously, respecting the rights of people, including non-Kenyans.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. World leaders addressed the United Nations General Assembly in New York, with many repeating UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres' warning that the world was on the edge of abyss due to threats of inequity, climate change, and the COVID-19 pandemic. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashar gives highlights of the 76th General Assembly meetings, including a major announcement that the Biden administration is planning to double its purchase of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccines for distribution around the world.
I think one of the main highlights is President Biden held a side event, a virtual side event, about the COVID-19 efforts to vaccinate the entire world. And he announced a half a billion doses the United States would be donating to developing countries and middle-income countries. They're going to ship 500 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine starting in January. And this will really boost efforts to get countries vaccinated, which is what we need to do.
So President Biden and French President Macron issued a joint statement after speaking by phone. How is that strained relationship between these two allies playing out at the General Assembly?
Yeah, this submarine deal that the United States made with Australia and also involved the British. And so the Australians had a contract already with the French, and they kind of pulled out of it and left the, you know, it's a multi-billion dollar contract. So the French are furious about it, absolutely furious. The French foreign minister has been very vocal about it here this week. And today the two leaders spoke on the phone, and I think there's sort of a little mea culpa in there for the Americans. It says that they agreed that the situation would have benefited from open consultations among allies. So the French, their big complaint is not just that they lost this multi-billion dollar contract, but that they were betrayed by a friend and a partner. And they were very upset by the secrecy of these discussions. And they were also very upset with the Australians, because apparently on the same day that the announcement was made about this change in plans, the Australians had reassured the French that the deal was going smoothly. So I think that's one mention in there. But on a positive note, the French say they're going to send their ambassador back to Washington next week, and he'll start working with senior U.S. officials. And that's very important, because they had withdrawn their ambassador, which is something you really don't see between allies like the U.S. and France.
And Margaret, more world leaders took to the podium today, and some sent in recorded speeches. What was the overarching theme of their speeches during these unprecedented times?
Well, I think definitely all week we're going to be hearing this. We heard it yesterday, and we heard it today quite a bit. And it's twin themes, really, I would say, tackling climate change and ending the COVID pandemic. And they're sort of tied together in the sense that leaders are trying to kind of find the silver lining in the COVID pandemic, and that would be building back better and recovering better in a green way. So we're going to come back from this pandemic, but we're going to make the planet healthier overall as part of our recovery effort, and put more investment into slowing climate change and also preventing a future pandemic. I mean, that's also another theme that's, you know, people are concerned about now, because they realize if this happened once, it could happen again.
And the Taliban requested that their representative be allowed to speak at the UN. Are there any updates on whether they will be allowed to have representation at the meeting?
So we heard from the UN that the that they forwarded this letter from the Taliban to the UN Credentials Committee, which is a 9-country group that reviews the applications for credentials to the UN for the ambassadors. And they won't meet until probably November, we're told. So this will get kicked down the road a bit, I think. But I don't see any possible way that the Taliban could speak here during this high-level week, because they're not accredited. So I think on a technical loophole, they won't be able to speak here. And we'll probably still hear from the previous government's ambassador.
That's VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir speaking with International Edition's Jackson Vunganyi. South Sudan's Vice President Rebecca Nyandeng de Mabior is in New York attending the 76th United Nations General Assembly. Nyandeng says her government is ready to open a new chapter with South Sudan's traditional allies in the international community. Nyandeng says South Sudan can correct her past mistakes if given a chance by the world bodies.
There were a lot of difficulties before, like, for example, the unknown gunmen and all these things. They are not there anymore. If you go to Juba now, the economics indications are showing. The IMF have helped us. So now we have balanced the exchange rate from the central bank and the market. It is 41-41. So it is improving the economy. Now also National Revenue Authority are doing very well. They have digitalized the system, the payment system. They have also removed the roadblocks, which was increasing the prices in the market. So the taxation will be paid annually only. And there is no another roadblocks, because all the roadblocks were put by an individual. It is not the government. That's why the government said this have to go, because it increased the prices in the market.
Speaking of roadblocks, the Juba Numuli Road, the main artery that brings goods into South Sudan from Uganda and Kenya, was recently paralyzed by insecurity, drivers being attacked and killed on the road. And that has caused prices of commodities to go really high in Juba. What has your government done about it?
Yeah, it was because of the fallout group, yes, attacking the truck drivers. And now the government of Uganda and government of South Sudan, they sat down, and now they will escort the group, the trucks. Before I left, 1,000 trucks arrived to Juba, because there were about 6,000 in Numuli. So now things are going back to normal.
I would like to come back to you. You are the first female vice president South Sudan has had. And in South Sudan, women for some time now have been complaining about the lack of fair and equal representation in government and just fair treatment in life, you know, in general. Being in your position, this high office, and being the chair of the youth and gender cluster, what have you done about this issue?
Yes, in my office, together with other offices like the Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, and the Parliament was just was inaugurated. But together we are working to see into it that the representation of women are realized. There are some problems, yes. Like, for example, in the executive, the percentage is 26%, and it was supposed to be 35%. And also in the parliament, but in the parliament is much better than in the executive. If you come to the presidency, at least this percentage in the presidency is okay, because it is a place that we are not reaching. And you know, women are reasonable people, coming out from tradition and cultures. In the country which are oppressing women, we are much better. We are going, and women are very reasonable, and they know that, but they should not keep quiet, and we are not quiet. We are talking so that what what was not met in the other areas should be met in the other areas. So I know that there are this problem, but the most important for us now is for our children to be secure, because the women are the one carrying the brunt of everything. They are losing their husband, they are losing their children. So the most important now in their agenda is to see peace coming to the country.
Well, I'm glad you admit there are problems with the 35% representation that's supposed to be guaranteed for women as per the 2018 peace agreement. And to your point, there have been some positive developments noted in the UN report, ONMIS report, to the UN Security Council, that we've seen the ascent of women to positions previously reserved for men. We have a woman Speaker of Parliament and a Deputy Speaker of the Council of State, which is a woman, Honorable Mary Ayen. And we already have a defense minister who is a female, Honorable Angelina Teng. And we had a foreign affairs minister who was a female, but she was fired recently and replaced by a man, Honorable Mayik Ayideng, which many people viewed as a setback.
No, I don't see it like that. Like, for example, when there is a room for dialogue, it's much better than the absence of dialogue. In 2013, 2016, there was no dialogue at all. So we have a room to dialogue, because if President Salva have done that, he has not consulted us or myself. Next time when there is another thing being done, we wanted that man to be replaced with a woman. So there is a room for us to dialogue. So yes, it was not good, I admit, that it was not good for the president to replace a woman with a man. It reduced even that 26% I was talking about. Exactly. But there is a room for us to dialogue, because, you know, there is a lot of sensitivity in the country. And if we talk about peace, you know, you have to be careful of how to do it. Because for us, peace is the only thing now we have in our hand in South Sudan. The region is tired of us. The international community are tired of us. They are fatigued. So with this, with all the shortcomings, we will nurture this, and it is very important to see into it that the problem, the crisis, should not come from the women. I know we are not happy, but we want peace. On top of everything, peace is number one.
Many people, South Sudanese, are skeptical and cynical about the prospects of peace, stability, the implementation of the peace agreement in South Sudan. And they don't trust much of what the government says. What do you have to say to these people?
You know, we need to be patient with a lot of things. Yes, they are right. We were coming out from the long war, and barely 3 years, we plunked ourselves into another one. I will not blame the people about the situation. It's for us as a government, because we ask our people to give us another chance so that we can serve them. But we need to make sure as a government to implement this agreement. It's very important. There's nothing else, as I stated earlier. The whole world is tired of us. Even our own people are getting tired. But they have to be patient and to give us another chance so that we can implement this agreement. There is nothing, there is no shortcut to freedom. If they wanted freedom, and they wanted to be secure in their own country, we have to walk this rough road. And we need them to be patient with us. I'm a mother, I have my children. And I know some of them are not even working. But the most important for us in our own household is to sleep with a lot of security, that you are not worried at night that somebody will come and knock at your door and say, get out. Yes, we know that there are crises here and there. We note it, and I stated earlier, I was not coming here to deny, you know, or to defend myself. But it is for us to engage positively, and for our friends to come to our aid to support us. But it is also on our side as a government to do our work also, so that we meet in the middle. It is not one side. So we are not denying as a government that there are no problems, there are problems. Even in those other countries, there are problems. Today we cannot go to Washington because there is There are riots here.
Madam Vice President, thank you very much for speaking with me this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabior, South Sudan's Vice President, speaking to Nabil Biaju here in Washington. A high court in Kenya has lifted an order freezing bank accounts of South Sudan's Minister of Cabinet Affairs, Martin Elia Lomuro. The court said Lomuro and his lawyers provided evidence to verify sources of Lomuro's money in a Kenyan bank account. Lomuro swears to go after those who wanted to tarnish his image. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Back in June, Kenya's High Court froze Lomuro's accounts at the Cooperative Bank of Kenya after the Kenyan Assets Recovery Agency reported there were reasonable grounds to believe that the funds were direct from profits or proceeds obtained from a complex money laundering scheme. Lomuro strongly denied any involvement in money laundering, saying the money came from his salary, allowances, and rental income he earned from his property. On Tuesday, anti-corruption court judge Cecilia Githua lifted the freeze order on Lomuro's Kenya bank accounts without restrictions. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus exclusively from Nairobi, Kenya on Wednesday, Lomuro said the court's action has proven the allegations against him were politically motivated.
So I'm very happy that the court in Kenya acted independently and judiciously, respecting the rights of people, including non-Kenyans, and studying the case legally, professionally. And now that we've been cleared, we are very happy as a family and as a minister who was unduly targeted by international political campaigners.
Lomuro says the decision to freeze his accounts was uncalled for because he had more than 200 documents proving that the source of every penny in his accounts was legal.
Any intelligent person should work out all my salary per annum, right? Leave alone the allowances I get when I'm traveling, leave alone the allowances I got when I was peace negotiating, leave alone my emoluments, my rights in the salary. And then leave alone the rents I get from the properties. I have properties that are being leased. I have houses that are being rented. And those, we have to document them, give them evidence.
The court ruled Tuesday that the Assets Recovery Agency was satisfied with the explanation provided by Lomuro on the source of funds. But Lomuro says the allegations of money laundering tarnished his image, and he and his family will track down those behind it.
All those cyber criminals and social media terrorists who are celebrating should be ready for me. I'm coming for them. Nobody has the right to sit somewhere in New York in the judgment of you. So give them that right. And because we kept quiet, they think we're stupid. They're not. For someone to wake up in the morning and receive calls from his wife, his father, and his sister, but there's this thing circulating that they are accused of money laundering. Obviously, if you are not Martin, you wouldn't be able to handle it.
Lomuro says he will take the individuals who sanctioned him to the International Court of Justice. Lomuro is expected to return to Juba from Nairobi today and resume his duties as Cabinet Affairs Minister. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, the military and civilian members of Sudan's transitional government exchange accusations after a failed coup attempt. That story is lined up after this break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and his deputy, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, blamed some members of the transitional government for competing over positions and failing to provide basic services to the Sudanese people. A cabinet minister in Sudan's transitional government says Al-Burhan's statement is a threat to the partnership between the military and civilians in the transitional government. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Members of the military component of Sudan's transitional government blamed this week's failed coup attempt on their civilian partners in the government, saying they failed to implement the objectives of the revolution. Addressing hundreds of newly graduated special forces on Wednesday at the Wadi Saidna Military Training Center in Omdurman, the head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, said officials failed to provide basic services to the citizens because they are too busy wrangling over top government positions. Al-Burhan says politicians have lost the vision of the December 2019 revolution and are blaming the transitional government's military component for all of the country's problems.
We have not seen any political party talking about the national election, democracy, or talking about how we will end this transitional period. We have not seen any of the political forces organizing a public rally with our grassroots communities. None of them is ready to go and address their problems. Citizens are left alone and politicians are here busy wrangling and quarreling over positions and pointing fingers of failure to the military.
On Tuesday, the Sudanese government announced it had contained a failed coup attempt planned by a group of military officers and politicians. More than 20 individuals have been arrested and are being investigated. Al-Burhan says the military will continue to adhere to the objectives of the revolution and carry out their role enshrined in the constitution until national elections are held at the end of the transitional period.
We as the military are more keen and serious that we end the transitional period on time, followed by national elections, which shall establish a civilian state, a state that will appreciate the role of the military and give us the respect we deserve. We are all aware that since the beginning of the transitional period, no one is giving us a hand. All our constructions and repairs, we do them alone. We are working alone despite difficult circumstances.
Later at the same event, Muhammad Hamdan Dagalo, deputy head of the Sovereign Council and commander of Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces, also blamed the country's deteriorating situation on the politicians. Dagalo said, unless the transitional period ends smoothly as enshrined in the constitution, Sudan will never achieve political, economic, and social stability.
We need to leave the betrayal and systematic targeting of our national institutions that provide security and stability to this country. We said this before and I will repeat it again. We don't have any intention or personal interest in ruling this country. We only want our citizens to live a dignified life.
Sudanese Cabinet Affairs Minister Khalid Yusuf Omar condemned the statement made by Al-Burhan and Dagalo, saying he regarded such statements as a coup on the constitution which could fuel more instability in the country.
This is a direct threat to the transition. It is an attack on the partners. It is an attempt to weaken the civilian component and the executive branch. This is a worrying development and it is a serious threat to the transitional period. We as the civilian component and members of the cabinet, we will not accept such an attack and we will face it and make necessary corrections. The transition should lead us to only one thing, which is a democratic civilian transformation.
In August 2019, Sudanese military leaders and political forces agreed to a power-sharing government during a transitional period of 39 months. According to the signed constitutional document, the military expects to lead the Sovereign Council for 21 months and a member of a civilian forces will lead for 18 months. Under the agreement, national elections will be conducted and a democratic civilian state will be established at the end of the transitional period. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Kampala, where Uganda has waived visa fees for South Sudanese citizens entering Uganda. Rebecca Alitwala Kadaga is Uganda's Deputy Prime Minister and Minister for Regional Cooperation. She says the new visa-free arrangement comes into effect at the beginning of October. For VOA News, Mungume Davis Rakarinj reports from Kampala.
Rebecca Alitwala-Kadaga, Uganda's Minister for East African Affairs, who also serves as Deputy Prime Minister, announced the visa free entry for South Sudanese citizens at a media briefing in Kampala today.
Effective 1st of October this year, the right of free access to Uganda to citizens of South Sudan will be implemented, but it's on a reciprocal basis. Therefore, we expect that the Republic of South Sudan will reciprocate so that the citizens of Uganda have free entry.
Kadaga says her government has given South Sudan a 30-day window to implement the same arrangement for Ugandan citizens. Ugandans and South Sudanese pay $50 for a one-way, 3-month visa to enter each other's country. Kadaga says Uganda is waiving visa fees for South Sudanese to implement the declaration of the agreement signed by the heads of the states in 2016 when South Sudan was admitted the East African Community, or EAC. The EAC is composed of 6 countries: Burundi, Rwanda, Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, and South Sudan. Minister Kadaga says the visa waiver will boost trade between the two neighbors.
Fees are a barrier to freedom of movement. If you have not paid for that visa, you cannot enter the country. We share the border, we share a lot of business opportunities, so it's really important that our people are able to move back and forth.
Thousands of Ugandans and South Sudanese routinely cross the border between the two countries on a daily basis, primarily for business and education. Rumbek State resident Veronica Michelle, who studies in Uganda, embraced today's announcement.
I've stayed in Uganda for like about 5 years now. So instead of me every time traveling to South Sudan, paying $50, so it's better that I have to save that money, the $50. And we are so grateful if they have really done that and if they are doing that for our country.
Michelle, a student of tours and travel from Young Men and Women Association College in Kampala, says the extra $50 in her pocket will go toward paying for scholastic materials and her accommodations. Joseph Majang, a student of finance and banking at Kampala International University, calls the move to waive visa fees a wonderful decision.
I'm a student here, and if I plan to travel, so it might deduct the school fee which I'm coming here to pay for. So if the visa is removed, then it will be my own advantage to come with whatever amount I have. I pay my school fee, and then life moves on.
Minister Kadaga says Uganda and South Sudan authorities have also discussed ways to ensure the safe movement of travelers across the two countries. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarenji in Kampala, Uganda.
Let us know what you think about issues in our news. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We reserve the right to read your brief comments every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with D. Coot and the song Peer Ahead.
Jaku jam jam angwiler wo da baba ben beye keda pir akornum pir ager akorman pan ku pir chuko mit ke bay sudan mel ku ne biro kaneng ka korke biro kaneng mit ke ne pir ager wo kai kol chuñ wey banru jangre wo tu wey ndugo kai bako kedwale ben jangru akola panda berawe jangru ben jambo mit ke sausu jangru woluñ wey ndugo
we have been listening to D. Coot and the song Peer Ahead. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
kai bako kedwa leven
dengere dengere
akola panda berawe
dengere dengere
and jambo mit ke sauce
dengere dengere
waluñ way ñinte ko
dengere dengere
we kai kot ke bay ci dum pañ gero dengere ki ci jeng tok ke kamule ya cham juyin fandu na jodi na torbe ki kañal
long long long
long long.